Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm excited, you guys. This is a conversation I've been looking forward to for some time. Karen Fitzpatrick from Meadow Lake Border Terriers is joining us, and we're going to talk Border Terriers and big winners and preservation breeding of the dual dog in Terriers, right? Like, I'm so excited about this. All right, you guys, as a breeder, you're passionate about setting up each puppy for success, whether that's in the ring or at home. While puppies can be vulnerable to unexpected accidents and illnesses, you can help ensure that they have access to high-quality care when they need it with Trupanion, medical insurance for pets. Trupanion created their breeder support program with responsible breeders in mind, so you're able to send each litter home with a special offer for immediate pet medical insurance coverage. When your buyers take advantage of this offer, their puppy receives coverage against whatever life may throw their way, from an upset tummy to a broken leg and everything in between. Trupanion can help. As a member of Trupanion's free breeder support program, you'll also receive access to more special perks, including comprehensive litter health insights, educational resources to share with your buyers, and more. So sign up today at trupanion.com/puredogtalk. Trupanion is underwritten in Canada by Accelerant Insurance Company of Canada, or GPIC Insurance Company, and in the United States by American Pet Insurance Company, or ZPIC Insurance Company. Welcome, Karen. How are you today? It's a snowy day in Chicago, right?
Yeah, a lot of snow, Laura. Thanks for having me.
This is fantastic. So give us a little 411. Give us your background, kind of how you wound up in Border Terriers. You didn't start in Border Terriers, am I right?
I didn't start in Borders. I actually started in Jack Russells, or today known as the Parson.
Parson.
But my background, honestly, was straight hunting. Mm. And I hunted long before I ever bred a Border. So hunting was such a big thing for me. I started here in the U.S. and then started hunting in the U.K., met people there, and just love the hunting aspect of Border Terriers. You know, crazily, if you really look at all the breeds that we have today, I think Borders are used still more often, even in the U.K., than they are. Of course, now it's a line drag and there's no real hunting, of course, but Border Terriers are still very high on the list for hunting instinct and actually are still made to do the job they were bred to do. So that's what's exciting.
I love that. And when did you get started? When did you get started in Borders?
Oh boy, I knew you were going to ask me that. I think my very first Border I acquired, believe it or not, I had friends that do bear hunting in West Virginia, and they said to me, I'd go over there, we'd have a great time. And she did dabble a little bit in Russells. Mm-hmm. And one day I was there, and she had a Border that was in a doghouse with straw. I mean, that's kind of the way they kept them. And she said, he's just too big to go to ground. He's great for raccoon. And at the time, I was doing a lot of barn hunting with raccoons and my dogs. And I said, I'll take him home. And absolutely fell in love with him, took him home, broke most of his teeth. I think there were days we would take 20 to 30 raccoons out of a hayloft in a day. I mean, we were nuts. I was young.
That is wild. I mean, talk to me. I'm a bird hunter, right? Like, so talk to me about going hunting with terriers and what does that entail? What does that look like?
Well, in the middle of winter, we did a lot of barn hunting, and that was just literally clearing out haylofts of raccoons. In this deep, deep snow like today, you would hit a big barn, cut a few terriers loose in a loft, and whoa, game on. It was crazy. And, you know, we did a lot of in-ground hunting during the spring and fall, but we tried to not do too much in the spring, mostly because of a lot of groundhogs having babies and stuff. You know, it's fall is probably the better time because they're big and fat and getting ready to hibernate and the holes are bigger. I know that sounds crazy, but we ran terriers to ground. You know, they go to ground. That's what they're bred to do.
Yes.
We put locator collars on them. We have a locator. We'll dig to them sometimes, God, anywhere from a foot down to, we've had digs, me personally, I'm sure other people go, well, I've dug more than that. I've had digs 4 to 6 feet. And what? It's crazy. Oh, yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy.
And so the terriers at the bottom of a 6 foot hole trying to get a what? What's it trying to get?
Usually groundhog, fox, some raccoon in this country, mm-hmm. You know, the UK is a different story. I mean, that's just a different world. But, you know, we used to go out every weekend here. And lo and behold, I took this barn hunting dog and somebody said to me, you know, that is really a nice dog. And at the time, I think he had just started the AWTA, which was the American Working Terrier Association. And he said, that's really a nice dog. You should try to show him. I'm like, show him where? Oh, the American Kennel Club. He took me to a show. I watched and I thought, okay, either these are all bad and mine is great, or mine is really bad and these are all great. I'm not sure. And I went home, groomed him like a parson or a Jack Russell and took him to his first show. And I think he got a 3-point major. I took him in the group. He got a group 4. And somebody said to me, aren't you going to take a picture? And I thought, no, I was 4th place. Why would I take a picture? You know, it was crazy, you know, and that kind of started it. I mean, so he started showing and yeah, no teeth and all. And I actually hired a handler to take him to Westminster. I was too intimidated. There was no way I was going to do that. And he made the cut. I mean, bless his heart. He made the cut. So
with no teeth. That's incredible.
With no teeth, with broken teeth. He had some teeth, but they were broke.
Yeah, oh my crazy. Gosh. Well, and you know, when I hear you talk about barn hunt, I'm like, that's not like the barn hunt like we get a thingy bobber for.
No, but it, you know, surprisingly, you know, the difference between the real world of hunting mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the game hunting that we do, the game mm-hmm. barn hunting. And we used to have an event called Go to Ground, which was very similar, except it was timed. At these Jack Russell trials, the fastest mm-hmm. dog won. But the fastest dog usually could never honestly hunt in the ground because it had no clue that when you ran head over heels, smack dab into a badger or a raccoon, your face was coming off. So good hunting dogs never were good game earth dog
playing
or
dogs.
Go to ground right. or barn hunt dogs. You know, we have the simulated version, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It still makes a dog use its head. Mm-hmm. I disagree sometimes with a little bit of the earth dog. And I think the only reason is the only quarry we can use in this country are rats. And I used to hunt rats. I used mm-hmm. to run ferrets to chicken houses. Oh yeah. I was crazy. I used to buy these old ferrets from swap meets, and we'd only buy the Jills, which is a female. We'd never buy Hobbs because they were too big, but we used to buy the females, these old breeder females, and they were mean as snot. I mean, they'd bite you, but they were small, and we used to take them and run them in these old chicken houses and cut them loose in these holes to run rats. But, you know, in the real world of rat hunting, a dog needs to be silent, mm-hmm. not bay its head off. Mm-hmm. So they are very selective. And if a dog doesn't sit there and bark its head off at a rat that's sitting back in a corner and not doing anything,
right.
you know, they don't want to reward it. And, you know, it's okay. People understand the game. We used to have, when they first started Earth Dog, we had a lot of judges who really kind of screwed up dogs mm-hmm. because they didn't understand the whole concept of hunting. And when a dog would go in a artificial den and get you a rat and not do anything, they would open the door, take it out, set the rat on the ground, and try to get it to bark. Well, let me tell you what they learned. You can guess. We don't need to go in the ground. We'll just go around the top because it's going to be at the top if we wait long enough. So anyway. So
fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So seriously, along the way, you were AKC Sport Breeder of the Year, right? In 2014, doing these games, right? So I think that's pretty
amazing.
Not
me. I have to tell you, it wasn't me. It was everything I bred.
Right.
I didn't do it. I didn't have time. But when that plaque and that ribbon and it came in the mail, I was like, wait, what? How did I win this? You know? But it was because I sold so many outstanding dogs with instinct.
Right.
And people were, you know, head over heels with that. And it was fantastic. I mean, I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud because I still, to this day, I think form, function, and instinct, we cannot lose that. We cannot lose that.
That's so, preservation breeding. Okay, got it.
Totally. Still breed today. I still am crazy about underlines, small, flexible, spannable chests. That to me is huge. It's huge. And balance. Leg, loin, length of back. It all plays such an important part in this breeding program in the world of terriers. If a chest drops below the elbow, you're out. Mm-hmm. Your dog's going to drag its chest on the ground trying to hunt. So even though we're not hunting today in the real world, they still need to be bred to do that job.
I don't know. I can't say that this has never happened otherwise, but in 2018, you were Terrier Breeder of the Year. So Sport Breeder and Breeder of the Year, which is confirmation, talk to us about, like, continue this conversation. Talk to us about how those two things go together in your mind. Because I think there's an awful lot of us who are really passionate about what you're talking about, like the dual dog, like the good-looking, good-working, good-minded, healthy dog that I think a lot of us are trying to accomplish.
When I walked out of the old Jack Russell Club, and I had Jack Russells for a long time, and we did the hunt shows. They were basically hunt shows. There was no tables involved. Dogs were spanned on the ground. We had so many judges from England who it was kind of a span or get out. Mm. I mean, if they couldn't span them, half of them couldn't tell how they walked anyway. But it was quite a bit of, you know, they had to be able to function and do their job. And my belief back then, as it is today, they can be beautiful and still do their job. And that is what I have absolutely brought through, and I will continue it. I will not change. I'm not a fad breeder. I just wish that, you know, a lot of judges won't get confused between correct and showy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that happens in every breed.
Girl, I know it. For people who are unfamiliar with terriers, unfamiliar with border terriers, talk about spanning, right? Talk about what is the judge trying to accomplish? Are they just checking the size of the rib cage, or are there some notes on flexibility? Talk to us about that.
Spanning has been around from day one.
Right.
In a working terrier, that is, especially in our breed where we do not have a height standard. Mm-hmm. There's no height standard.
Right.
If you can span them, they can do their job. If you can't span them, they can't. So narrow, when you look down on them, it should be one smooth line. The shoulder should never come outside of the rib cage. Because who cares if you can span them if you can't get the front end in? So, I mean, it only makes sense. So spanning basically, you know, I think in the beginning, what they're trying to compare it to is the circumference of a dog fox and how big that fox is and where he can fit. Where the fox can go, the terrier should follow. And if you've ever put your hands on a fox, which I'm sure you haven't, but they are just little, small, spindly. I mean, they're tiny. They're tiny in the chest. You can have a big fox who has no chest. So that is our way of telling judges, if you can't put your hands around them, then they can't do their job. And I think the Border Terrier Club is instrumental in bringing it through. And if you attend the seminars, they teach you how to span. A lot of people can't span. And a lot of your really good terrier judges, they don't need to pick them up and squeeze them and take them off the table. I mean, most of them you can tell. I can tell just by looking at them if I can get my hands around them. Mm-hmm. Some will fool you, but to be able to span them, and it's, you know, right behind the elbow, just right over the top of the withers. A dog that is very deep-chested and very pointy over the top through the withers, you usually can't get your hands around. The shape is wrong. We want an oval chest. I do. I breed for an oval. When you get deep-chested and slab-sided, you're going to breed it right out of your breeding program. And that's what so many people do. They don't know how to get in and get out. You know, you can get in and go for something. Say you want a little more narrow front, but you can't keep going down that line because pretty soon they're looking like race dogs. You know, pretty soon you're got these deep chests with too much tuck up and, you know, they can't do their job. So spanning is simply a way to assess a dog's ability and structure to be able to go into the ground and do their job correctly. And I'm a fanatic about it.
And it's my understanding, if I remember reading the standard properly, it's the size of a man's hand. Now, my hands are bigger than your average girl hands, but still, they're not the size of an average man's hand. So, like, I get it, right? But talk people through that concept.
I think the best way to do it is have someone like me mm-hmm. pull out several dogs,
right,
where I can say, this is a great chest. And you put your hands on that dog and you go, wow, yeah, I can feel that. Now, here's one that's a little big. Put mm-hmm. your hands on that. It's each person has to feel their. And the more you judge and the more you put your hands on dogs, mm-hmm. the more you will feel it and the more you will be able to do it. I had a newer judge about a year ago who she was pretty new. And I had a bitch that I can span like putty. And it's a bitch. I mean, mm-hmm. if you have a bitch you can't span, she needs to go to the breeding. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Right.
And she was putty mm-hmm. and beautiful. Absolutely dropped it gorgeous. And she beat me. Matter of fact, she didn't even give me select. And she was provisional. She was new. And I thought, what is wrong with you? And I had no idea it was spanning. I found out, I don't know, weeks later, someone had talked to her in some other state or something, and she had made a point of saying, oh, I had to beat Karen Fitzgerald. And I thought, oh, lady, you need to come to my kennel and put your hands on some dogs because you're not understanding that with your small hands, you don't look for the smallest one you can find because you can get your hands around it.
Right.
So you have to be careful of that. And again, getting in with somebody who teaches you. And once you put your hands on a really nice, flexible chest, you know. Right. You'll just know.
Right.
You'll never forget.
Yeah. You can tell the difference. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Hey, you guys. Does your dog have itchy, like sensitive skin? If so, think about trying the new ProPlan Veterinary Supplements Skincare Soft Chews. This supplement is specially made to support dogs' skin health, including conditions like sensitive skin and seasonal allergies. ProPlan Veterinary Supplements Skincare Soft Chews feature collagen, EPA and DHA, vitamin E and zinc to support the dog's skin health. Omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids help maintain the natural skin protective barrier. Vitamin E provides antioxidant support, while zinc offers immune support. So look for the National Animal Supplement Council quality seal on the package that certifies that skincare soft chews meet the highest quality and compliance standards for pet supplements. They also taste great and are easy to add to your dog's daily feeding routine. ProPlan's Veterinary Supplements Skincare Soft Chews are available via the My Purina app or by visiting purina.com/mypurinaapp, where you earn points on every purchase. You can also buy it online at Chewy and Amazon and in stores at Petco. Talk to us about kind of like your I don't know how you call it, your breeding formula, right? Like, I want to make these dogs that have these characteristics, you know, the form, the function, all those things. What is your process? Like, talk to other breeders out there who are aspiring to do the same thing in other breeds.
I'm not sure. You know, I'm one of those breeders who doesn't have a recipe.
Okay.
I honestly, I've been doing it for so long. And you know what will come through, and you know what won't. Mm-hmm. You know what you can breed away from. You know what you can change. You know what you can sneak in and sneak out. I don't really have it. I don't look at something and put it through a computer and tell me this is my inbreeding coefficient. Mm-hmm. I don't do it. I breed healthy. And I'm not going to say we don't all get something weird and you kind of go, well, where did that come from?
There.
You know, it happens to everybody. You breed enough, it happens to everybody.
Yeah. Yep.
But I just look for a really consistent, and I don't breed anything that isn't outstanding. Mm-hmm. I don't breed bitches that have to be outstanding. I don't care if they're a little big. I mean, that's okay. You know, as long as they don't come from giraffes. You know, if you have a bitch that's a little bigger than you kind of want a special. And in the same sense, I have multiple best in show bitches that I bred one time because I know I'm not going to get what I want. And it's kind of crazy. And I've had two multiple best in show bitches that never got in whelp. So
talk about that. That's one that I had to learn that the hard way. Right. Like, I had a really top winning bitch and I showed her and I was so proud of her. And then I finally got around to breeding her. And I mean, I managed to get two litters out of her, but we went through a lot of hell to get there.
So it's a tough one. Borders are not real prolific. We have a lot of high incidence of, we get a lot of pios. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of inertia. We get a lot of bitches that just don't take. And I've kept bitches out longer than I want to. I mean, Maya. Mm-hmm. Maya broke the all-time record and had four litters.
Is that Sinful?
Yes. And came out of retirement and got a group three at the garden and went back and had another litter. You know, she was amazing. Valentine, I stopped on last year in October because she was getting close to five. And I thought, man, if I don't stop and breed this, I'm never going to get puppies. Mm-hmm. And bam, got right in whelp, had six puppies. So, you know, you're just crazy. And then, you know, two that I stopped on and never got in whelp. So, and I really like showing bitches.
So it was a conversation I saw somewhere. Somebody like ran all these calculations and why male dogs win more often. I'm like, I don't think that's actually true. So talk to me about that, because I think that's a really fascinating. What makes you love showing bitches?
The same reason I like hunting bitches.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
They don't stop. Mm-hmm. My bitches, you know, when you're in the field and you're working a bitch, I would tell you they will go to the hell and back to get their quarry. Mm-hmm. They don't give up. A male gets bit on the nose or gets a little roughed up and he comes out and he goes, I just can't. I just don't think I can do this anymore. When a male quits, it's over. You know, when they go, you know what? I'm not feeling it anymore. You know,
Netflix, mom, Netflix.
Honest to God. So I don't know. I think the bitches they can be a little hotter. Mm. You know, bitches can be a little spicy. Mm-hmm. And when they're spicy, they're just, I want to do it. You don't see that so much in males. And, you know, in our breed, it's frowned upon. Nobody wants anything that's got a little spice to it. You know, it's crazy. It's okay for the fox terrier, or it's okay for the wires. You know, it's cute when the schnauzer gets aggravated. They think it's funny. People frown. When the borders get a little pissy, they're like, oh, that's a bad temperament. Mm. But you can't have a true good working terrier that does not have a little spice to it. They need to get along. There's no question about that, but they've got to have a little tenacity to them. They can't just be these little drips. And I do a lot of behavioral work too with a lot of people. And for years, people would come to me with borders that they couldn't live with, that they had gated because they'd kill each other. absolutely kill each other. But they would stand outside a show ring and their dogs would be little statues and they would brag about how good and quiet and sweet their dogs were, but yet you couldn't live with them. They had to get rid of them. And I run 20. Mm-hmm. We have 20 dogs and I do not have a kennel. Mm-hmm. I do not. And at any given time, there's 13 or 14 on the couch. You know, they got to get along. My bitches have to get along. My dogs mm-hmm. have to get along. Do we have squabbles? Sure. Right. Sure. Right. But I guarantee you within 5 minutes, they will get along. They will. I mean, it's, you have to rule tough. You have to be tough. If you're going to rule a bunch of terriers running together, it's a little bit of a different
situation. Some boundaries. We like to call them boundaries.
I got off the question. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We chase a lot of squirrels on this podcast, so it's totally fine. It's totally fine. I think what you're talking about is really, really important. And it makes me think my mom had a couple border terriers a number of years ago.
Oh.
Yeah. I love them. I think they're fantastic little dogs. And the idea that they're the not feisty terrier, right? Like most people, when they talk about border terriers, they think of them, they don't spar them, right? Like these are the nice terriers. You can have a border terrier kind of thing.
You don't spar them because they will kill each other. That's why they don't spar them.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
Why other reason would they not spar them?
You know, I don't know.
I know. There you go.
Interesting. Interesting. So that's a misunderstanding, a myth out there in dogland. That's interesting.
Well, you know, I don't care what breed it is. Two males, unless you have absolutely no bitches and they just hump each other in a household, they're going to get along. But two males with a bitch in a household is not going to happen. I don't care what people tell you. And somebody out there may say, oh, well, I have two and they get along. Well, okay, you're the exception to the rule. My males get along fine, but I guarantee you when I get girls coming in heat.
We do a little separation of church and state is not a bad thing.
That's right. And it's the same. And I think one thing I've learned about borders over the last 30 years is they do hold a grudge. They do hold a grudge. You go to the dog park and somebody gets in their face and all hell breaks loose, you're not going back to the dog park. You're just not. It's not going to happen. I don't care how sweet
your dog. It's not just that dog, it's that location. Interesting.
It's the whole thing. They are just the location, the whole one bad experience. It doesn't take much to turn them the wrong way. And that's why you see a lot of people that have two bitches who don't realize that things are escalating or they don't read body language. And next thing I know, it's a bloodbath and they can't get them back together. And they said, well, we've never had trouble till then. No, you did have trouble.
You just missed
the trouble.
Interesting.
You know,
that's a really, really important point. And I think really an issue out there in Doglandia is that the average owner doesn't get dog language, dog communication, either with them or with each other, right?
Yep. That's it. Years and years and years ago, I had a multiple best in show bitch, and she was mean. She would get along pretty well at home. She really didn't have any squabbles at home, but if you were walking to the ring and you got to the ring, I guarantee you she'd have a tuft of hair in her mouth and you wouldn't know where she got it from. Ask Nancy Martin. Poor Nancy Martin. I think she about killed me one day because it about took one of her Spinoni's ears off.
Oh my God.
And she was just that fast.
Yeah.
And right. She was nasty and she never produced a bad dog. And I've gotten generations that have come down from that.
Interesting.
And she was a show dog.
Well, I tell people all the time when I'm picking wire hair pointers, because right, the same thing. Like I'm looking for a dual purpose dog. If it stands up on its own when I put it on the table and it's got, you know, some self-possession about it, it's going to make a great show dog. It's also going to make a great bird dog because that confidence, the self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
So what would you think is your biggest struggle in the breed? Now, I know my mom, when she had hers, her breeder had problems with bites. Like she had a couple that the bites had gone and that's why they went to her as a pet home. Is that something you fight with or you see it in the breed or what do you think?
Maybe 8 years ago, I brought in a dog that was bred in England and landed in Russia, and I brought him here. I had him for 4 months, and there were things I didn't like about him, but I was starting to lose size of teeth.
Oh, interesting.
My bites are perfect, but I love big teeth. I mean, I want to open their mouth and I want to see some big teeth. And he did bring back a lot of really great teeth for me, and my bites are beautiful. My teeth are big. Mm-hmm. And I don't struggle at all. And a lot of people think because I actually have correct heads and short muzzles that I have bite problems. I don't have bite problems. I have a litter now of 6. I mean, they're gorgeous. I just don't really struggle with bite problems. Every once in a while, you'll get a tooth out of whack. Mm-hmm. If they get a little base narrow, mm-hmm. you got to watch that.
Yeah.
If you're conscientious and you know what's happening, you know, I think what a lot of people miss is, you know, your bottom canines, especially if you have a base narrow or even slightly narrow. And borders, you know, of course, your adult teeth come in on the inside of those baby canines.
Right.
So if your base narrow and those adult canines are coming in and your babies aren't out, you're going to kill yourself. And a lot of people just don't look. And then all of a sudden they look and they go, oh my God.
Yeah.
So you got to be aware. I mean, you just have to be aware. But no, I don't really have any bite problems. I don't struggle with too much. I'm a movement person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love watching my puppies trot down the hallway and, you know, I really want to see good fronts, and I'm known for good fronts. Most of my stuff all has really good fronts. So,
and I think that's a really fascinating conversation all by itself, right? Because a good front, right? A good front for a border terrier mm-hmm. would not mm-hmm. be a good front for another breed. So talk to us about what that entails for you.
Well, reach and drive, mm-hmm. you know, they're not sporting dogs.
Right.
But they're not fox terriers either. Mm-hmm. We want a good 90-degree angle, you know, a good upper arm, good scapula, should mm-hmm. be equal in length and angle. Mm-hmm. And we should have something that actually can cover ground without breaking at the knee. And like in any breed, people get a little off the tangent and they want more is better. Mm-hmm. And I listen to people's comments and they'll see a picture of a border that's got this crazy angled front shoulder, and I know it's not gonna be able to walk. I know it's gonna mince. I know it's not gonna have any reach, because what people are failing to see is they're tending to breed a little bit more upper arm than they are scapula, a little bit longer, and that's all it takes to screw it up.
Interesting. Longer upper arm than scapula. That is a fast, because we see it the other way.
You look at it, yeah, and we're seeing a lot of sickle hocks because they're breeding too much rear. You see that,
yeah.
You know, and you know, I love Minpins. I love Minpins. Mm-hmm. And that's been the problem. And even in Minpins mm-hmm. is moderate is key, right. People.
Right.
You know, right. So people are just getting off this beaten path. They're getting long, they're getting low, they're getting mm-hmm. too angled. Mm-hmm. And they're just losing. It might look nice, but it's not a working terrier. It'll kill you in the ground. So
yeah, mismatched angles do not make.
Yeah,
I talk to people about this all the time. Like, if they're going to run all day, you can't have one and like whatever this is in the next county.
Same with pasterns. You know, they need to do the same job a foxhound does. Mm-hmm. You know, these dogs need to travel the same terrain. They need to be able to do, you know, the fells, and they've got to have just a slight give to that pastern. They can't have a fox terrier pastern. They can't. Mm-hmm. They would never be able to do their job. Never. They've got to have that little bit. We want a nice cat foot, nice tight toe. Just that little bit of slight give to the pastern. Slight. Just not a straight pastern or a flat foot. So it all goes in. We want a nice laid back rib. Today we're seeing a lot of borders with short ribs and long loins.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get you anywhere. I mean, they can't turn around in the hole. It's a weak back. If there's no rib to support that back,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, for God's sake, in a fox terrier, you want rib to support that back. Mm-hmm. I don't care how short the back is. You've got to have that rib to support that top line. Otherwise, you get dippy. They get weak in the back, and they start to fall apart. So You know, I've got a bitch I finished, I don't know, probably in one weekend, who is just my little pride and joy. And I'm not breeding her because I don't know how to make it better. I know what her faults are. I just don't know where to go or what to do to fix it. And she's just a doll. But I just keep looking at her and going, and everybody's like, aren't you ever going to breed her? And I'm like, maybe when I find the perfect dog that I think I can breed what I want to breed from that, I will. I don't just breed dogs to breed dogs. And most people right. will tell you, my males, I barely breed out. Mm-hmm. Unless the bitch is very deserving. I don't want to bastardize my dogs. You know, I want to produce great terriers. Mm-hmm. I don't want to produce numbers. We have 170 champions, though.
Right.
So we're.
Right. You're doing okay.
We've got a lot of
dogs. Doing all right.
I think I have 12 best in show dogs now.
Right.
12 best in show borders.
But I mean, what you're talking about, you're not doing like line breeding or inbreeding or, you know, are you doing more of a phenotype type of thing? Is
no.
that what you're talking about?
I inbreed.
Okay.
I inbreed 99% okay. of the time.
Okay.
Line breed once in a while. Yeah, I don't go out. I've gone out twice in 25 years.
Oh, wow.
That's it. I just bred to a dog that is out of a bitch I bred, but by an outcross dog. I won't go that far out. I'm scared to death. I went out with the Russian dog that I brought over, and I'm still paying for it.
My mother used to say that every time she outcrossed to get one thing, she got 10 things she didn't want.
Right. That's it. And I got a lot of really good there, but I got things that the first cross, my bitches are strong. They're outstanding. You know, one's in California right now. Valentine was one. That's an outcross breeding. Mm-hmm. Now trying to come back, I've got to come back in tight as heck.
Yep.
And, you know, to try and retain or not lose. Mm-hmm. So, again, I'm one that inbreeds. I'm an inbreeder, line breeder.
You know what you have and what you're working with. So, I mean, that makes a big difference, too.
It does. And I've bred dogs that people are breeding that they're like, well, why don't you breed to that dog? You bred him. Mm-hmm. That's why I won't breed to him. I know exactly what he's going to produce and exactly what I am not bringing in. I know what his fault is, where it came from, and it's going to keep popping out and it will be the
and
kiss
of death.
And I don't
want it.
No. And you know the problem, a lot of people are overnight successes and you know that. They're overnight
you see it.
Breeders mm-hmm. and nobody asks. And that bothers me to the moon and back. If somebody bought a dog from you, and you knew all the holes for 10 mm-hmm. generations mm-hmm. and they went off on their own little tangent without saying, what do I need to be worried about? Mm-hmm. I want to breed this. What do I have to fear? Where are my skeletons?
Where should I go?
Yeah. They won't ask you.
I know. I happen to be super blessed with kind of a really small little group of young women, all of which used to work for me that have been willing to work with me and carry on when I can't, you know, like you have border terriers, I have wire hair pointers. When you have a litter of 14 wire hair pointers at my age, it's just not a thing, man.
Oh, that's so hard.
That's not a thing. Crawling around on my hands and knees, cleaning up poopy after 14 wire hair puppies. I'm telling you, I'm pieced out, but I do have serious. It's like a lot, but unfortunately I do have some young women who I'm working with. And so I think we're like way over time, but I don't care. I'm having fun. Talk a little tiny bit about ways that you think you succeed in mentoring, ways you wish more people would seek mentoring, some of that kind of stuff.
Oh, I love to mentor people. I absolutely love them, and I will help anybody groom. You know, if they just come to me and I need help with my dog, I'm so happy to help people at any time. I pride myself on being a great mentor, and the people I have mentored are very successful. Mm-hmm. The people I mentored, I think the mistake that a lot of new people make is instead of finding one person to mentor them, they have several. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, a cluster thing. And pretty soon they don't know which way to go because they don't know who to listen to anymore.
Right.
And opinions differ so much. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came around, was I picked what I love. And I had a great eye. It wasn't like I was somebody who, you know, I came from horses. I'm horses my whole life. And, you know, when I came into it, I had a real good eye. You couldn't convince me something was great when I could look at it and say, no, it wasn't.
Right.
And today we have people who have been breeding for years and years and years who I feel sorry for. You know, it pains me. You know, you make a lot of enemies when you go out there and you win all the time. But, you know, you want to say, oh, man, do you kind of not see what's going on? And so I wish more people would seek mentoring, even if you've been in it. Mm-hmm. Even if you say, you know, my dogs aren't doing as well as they should. Where am I lacking? Mm-hmm. And I've had people come to me with just bad bitches and say, how can I get good? Kind of start over. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to start over. I still believe bitches are 80% of what you get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
not just the bitch itself, but what's behind her. Right. That whole, magical X chromosome, man.
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. And, you know, everybody wants to breed to the flavor of the month. And all that does is make him produce more numbers and more junk.
Yeah.
And
breeding to ribbons isn't going to get you very far down the rabbit hole, if you will.
And even if it gets you one dog, where do you go from there? Mm-hmm. You know, then what do you do? I think consistency, I am in awe of breeders who consistently breed great dogs.
Yeah. I look around and I see who I like and who I respect and who has the dogs, and I call them up and put them on the podcast.
But it's true, isn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. some of my idols through the years, you know, I'd watch Amy Booth, and mm-hmm. year after year after year, they come out with something. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is what determines a great breeder, is not somebody who can produce a one-hit wonder mm-hmm. or, you know, a couple out of enough numbers that you get lucky. It's somebody who comes out consistently with good dogs. You know, Pat Trotter, I mean, you know, they get it. They just get it. You know, they're not breeding by anybody's dictionary. They have the gift, and it's so much fun. It's just, I love talking to those people. I love it. I just love it. Kent with the Shepherds. Yep. I could talk to him all day long.
Oh, yeah. I had him on, I don't know, I saw him somewhere, Chicago a couple of years ago, and sat him down, and it was the same thing. I'm like, okay, we're going long, but tell me this other thing.
Yeah. 100%. But you want to listen to those people. I've listened to something else he did, and it was for a German Shepherd Club, I think. Mm. And I just loved it. And he kept throwing the F-bombs, and I was laughing. And
I try really hard. Like, it's been known that things slip out here on this podcast, but, you know, we try. We try. Well, Karen, thank you. I sure appreciate your time on a snowy Sunday in Chicago.
Oh, no, you're so welcome.
I love talking about dual dogs, and there's a remarkable amount of consistency across the people I talk to that are really advocating for the dual purpose preservation, like preservation breeding. And so absolutely. I love that. It's just a fantastic conversation. So thank you.
Oh, no, you're so welcome. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And it was great.
Thanks so much, Karen. All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life. You know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.